and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast, brought to you today by the Bradley Foundation. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but first we want to get right into it, and what we're getting right into is the first day of the former President Trump impeachment trial, number two. So, the first day, as determined beforehand, was going to be this four-hour debate about whether it's constitutional to try a former president. I've talked about this a lot, written about it, did a podcast about it, I think that the strongest evidence is that it is not constitutional to try a former president, although there are arguments on the other side, and it's not unreasonable to think the other way. But anyway, that's what I think. But it was never in doubt that Democrats were going to win this vote. Actually, if the Senate had voted that it was unconstitutional, then the whole thing would have just stopped right there. That wasn't going to happen. Democrats were going to vote unanimously that it was that it's constitutional to try a former president because they want to try Donald Trump. And there were a number of Republicans who went along with them on this. Remember, Rand Paul, the Republican senator, had a test vote on this in late January, and 45 Republicans voted that it was unconstitutional, and 5 voted that it was constitutional. In other words, they went along with Democrats. This time, 6 Republicans went along with Democrats. There were the 5 were the ones that we expected: Collins, Murkowski, Romney, Sass, and Toomey. And then there was one more that we didn't really expect, and that was Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. And he was asked, "Well, why'd you change your mind or your vote? What influenced your thinking?" And he basically said that President Trump's legal team did a really terrible job, and he's right. They did do a terrible job. There's just no doubt that they did a pretty bad job. Bruce Castor, David Schoen, really did not get to the meat of the argument. Castor just meandered around and talked for 48 minutes, just almost nothing. Very, very ineffective counsel. There's just no doubt about it. Now, that leads to a question. You know, if you're a senator, what do you do? If you've looked into this issue and you believe that it's unconstitutional, are you going to change your vote because the lawyers do a bad job trying to sell you on it? Or are you going to vote the way you've already decided because you've been studying this issue? And, you know, most Republicans, 44 of the 45 that voted this way in late January, decided to go along with their the decisions that they, you know, they walked into the Senate chamber with these opinions, having looked at it. Like, presumably everybody in the Senate has looked at this question, and they weren't going to make a decision based on the performance of the lawyers. But in terms of the performance of the lawyers, the Democratic House managers did a much better job than the Trump defense team. Probably ought to talk about that at some point, not right now. But there is this interesting kind of disparity of resources in trying a former president, because when Trump was president and was impeached, he had the White House counsel's office, like a law firm. He had that, and then he added some outside counsel. Now, he doesn't have the White House counsel's office, but the House still has all the resources of the House of Representatives. So there's a bit of an imbalance there. In any event, the vote went as expected, and the constitutionality issue is settled for this moment. It's not settled in law or anything. They didn't take this to the Supreme Court. But it's settled for this trial. They're going to go ahead. So what we do now is start to argue the substance of the issue. And you're going to see the House Democratic impeachment managers attempt to prove that Trump, when he was president, incited a crowd to insurrection on January 6th when the pro-Trump rioters ransack the Capitol. Republican senators are going to have to address it, even if they thought it was unconstitutional and they're just never going to consider it because it's unconstitutional. They will need to grapple with some of these issues that are raised. So, in my view on this, the key to this argument will be how much weight the senators put on the events of January 6th specifically versus the events of the 2 months prior to the Capitol riot. So that is, did Trump, specifically with his remarks on January 6th at the Stop the Steal rally on the Ellipse, did he incite that crowd to go to the Capitol, to break in, to threaten lawmakers, to wreak havoc on the day that Congress was going to ratify the results of the Electoral College? Okay, did Trump do that on January 6th, or does a close examination of his remarks fail to support that charge? You can look at what he said. Okay, now, the Trump defense team and a lot of Republican senators are going to focus almost exclusively on those events of January 6th. Okay, so they're going to go through the Trump speech. Now, he spoke for more than an hour. It was a long speech. There's a lot to go through. And they're going to conclude, probably already have, that no, Trump did not incite the crowd to breach the Capitol building. Instead, they're going to focus on Trump's exhortation to the crowd to march, quote, over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard, end quote. Now, if you look at the Trump defense brief, the defense memorandum, it cites that remark peacefully 11 times. 11 times. They make a big deal about that. So, that's what Trump's lawyers are going to do, at least what I think they're going to do. And they're going to focus on January 6th. Now, Democrats are going to focus also on that day. They're going to look at that day, and they're going to focus on what something else the president said in his speech, which is the admonition to the crowd to, quote, fight like hell, suggesting that Trump was telling the crowd to use violence at the Capitol. The House impeachment brief quotes the fight like hell remark 10 times. 10 times. The Trump defense is going to respond in two ways, I think. First, it's going to quote the fight like hell line in the fuller context to show that Trump was speaking in political and not physical terms. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you sort of the full paragraph that the fight like hell part came from. So this is Trump speaking, quote, "Our brightest days are before us. Our greatest achievements still wait. I think one of our great achievements will be election security, because nobody, until I came along, had any idea how corrupt our elections were. And again, most people would stand there at 9 in the evening," and he's referring to on election night, "again, most people would stand there at 9 o'clock in the evening and say, I want to thank you very much, and they go off to some other life. But I said, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong. Can't have happened. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore." Okay. So the question is, was that an exhortation to physically fight? And the second point that the Trump defense team and Republican senators, and again, assuming the Trump defense team has a coherent argument on this, the second point the Trump defense team is going to make is that the word fight is commonly used in politics as an appeal to action. The Trump team is going to show a video of many Democrats using the word themselves, not just fight, but fight like hell, the president's exact phrase. And by the time the argument is over, I think Trump's defenders will have made the case that the Democrats' reliance on fight like hell is an overly literal reading of the president's words on January 6th that twists the plain meaning of his message. Now, in addition, Republicans are going to point to the timeline, to the events of January 6th, as further evidence that Trump's speech did not incite the crowd to violence. Now, we know now that some of the rioters gathered originally near the Capitol. They never went near the Trump event on the Ellipse, and they had actually gathered on the east side of the Capitol, which is the other side of the Capitol from the Ellipse. They never went to the Ellipse, and they had planned for days or weeks ahead of time to cause some sort of trouble at the Capitol. And they started doing it before Trump even finished speaking. So if you take all that together, I think all that will be enough to convince most Republicans that Trump did not incite the riot. Now, I'm going to talk about the Democratic response, because they certainly have one. Talk about the Democratic response in just a minute after I talk a little bit about the Bradley Foundation. If there's anything the events of the past few weeks and even the past year have shown us, it's that the country is at an inflection point. Ronald Reagan had a saying, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction," and that has never seemed so true as right now. Political divisiveness in our lives, riots and looting and the cancel culture are all antithetical to the values upon which America was founded. Americans must ask now how to restore, how to strengthen and protect the principles and the institutions that make us exceptional. Now, as we navigate through these unprecedented times, We the People, a Bradley speaker series, offers insights and ideas on the current challenges we face from some of the most remarkable organizations that the Bradley Foundation supports. Now visit bradleyfdn.org/liberty to watch the first episode of the 2021 season. It features Kay Coles James, who's president of the Heritage Foundation, and she shares her thoughts on the state of our republic, how to ensure the integrity of elections, what it means to be conservative, and how to advance freedom and free enterprise. So go to bradleyfdn.org/liberty. Now that is Bradley with an L-E-Y, fdn.org/liberty. So one more time, bradleyfdn.org/liberty, and you can watch the video. New episodes will debut every other week, so come back often and subscribe to their YouTube channel to be notified whenever a new one is posted. Okay, I promised to talk about what the Democrats would do in this. Okay, remember, the Republicans are going to focus very specifically on the speech of January 6th and Trump saying, go peacefully to the Capitol. And Democrats are going to say, no, no, he said, fight like hell. Well, for Democrats, the weakness of the fight like hell argument will simply show that they need to make a bigger case to convince the Senate that Trump is guilty. They will have to show that the real incitement occurred before January 6th, starting even before the election and going through the weeks and months when Trump refused to accept the election results, even after the states had certified their results and the Electoral College voted on December 14th to cement Joe Biden's election as president. After December 14th, Electoral College Day, Trump turned his attention to January 6th, when Congress would ratify the Electoral College results, and that would be the last chance to overturn Joe Biden's victory. So Trump made a big deal about this. So on December 19th, on December 19th, Trump tweeted, quote, "Statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election. Big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there. Will be wild," with an exclamation point. Now, after that was December 19th. After that, Trump promoted the rally with several tweets, some of which were belligerent. On December 26th, for example, day after Christmas, he tweeted, quote, "If a Democrat presidential candidate had an election rigged and stolen with proof of such acts at a level never seen before, the Democrat senators would consider it an act of war and fight to the death. Mitch and the Republicans do nothing," all caps, "just want to let it pass. No fight," all caps, exclamation point. Now, if you'll remember, on January 4th, Trump went down to Georgia to give a speech for the two Republicans, Perdue and Loeffler, who were running in those Senate races in Georgia. Remember, that race was, the election was on January 5th. It was a disaster for Republicans. So on the night before January 4th, Trump goes down to Georgia to campaign. So this is what he says there. This is a quote from Trump again. Quote, "The radical Democrats are trying to capture Georgia's Senate seats so they can wield unchecked, unrestrained, absolute power over every aspect of your lives. If the Liberal Democrats take the Senate and the White House, and they're not taking the White House, we're going to fight like hell, I'll tell you right now. Okay, so those are the kind of statements that Trump made, certainly between December 14th, when the Electoral College voted, and January 6th, when Congress was going to ratify the Electoral College results and the Capitol riot intervened. Okay, so Democrats are going to cite those statements, and they're going to cite more than that. I mean, they're going to quote some of the rioters themselves who in various parts of the country are facing criminal charges, and they're in trouble, and they want to get out of trouble, and they have told investigators that they attacked the Capitol because Trump told them to do it. So they're going to say they were incited by that. Now, the House managers are going to argue that when you take all of that in its entirety, the evidence shows that Trump incited the riot. Now, that's obviously going to be enough to convince Democratic senators because, as I've been saying through this podcast, I mean, they've all got their minds made up. I mean, the Bill Cassidy thing was kind of interesting because he appeared to have been swayed by the badness of the Trump lawyer's performance. But most everybody on both sides has his or her mind made up on this. So the case that the Democrats make is going to be certainly enough to convince Democratic senators. Because after all, I mean, most of them voted to convict Trump a little more than a year ago in the first impeachment. So then some Republicans are going to join the Democrats. Now we have six who've at least said that the trial is a constitutionally permissible exercise. So will they all vote to convict? I don't know. Let's say they do, and it's 56. That would be well short of the 67 votes required to convict Trump, and so Trump would be acquitted. Okay, so what should you think about the incitement charge? The way I go through it is this. First of all, the case that Trump incited the violence specifically with his January 6th speech is pretty weak. But Democrats have a stronger case when they throw in Trump's quotes from November, around the election, all the way through the riot. I mean, Trump refused to accept the election result. He claimed it had been stolen, and he urged his supporters to come to Washington to protest. Now, on the other hand, was there any moment in all of that where he specifically urged followers to attack the Capitol and do what they did, ransack through the Capitol? No, there was not such a moment where he specifically urged his supporters to do that. The Democrats' best argument is really broader than that, and this is it. It's that none of this would have happened had Trump not refused to recognize the election results for weeks. He whipped up, he stirred up his most passionate supporters, and he encouraged them to believe that the election had been stolen. He asked them to come to Washington to protest. And then things got out of hand in just an awful way. So that's their best argument. But it, too, has weaknesses, because even if Trump created a larger context, the rioters acted on their own. And a lot of Republicans will say, look, they had agency in this. They didn't have to take a baseball bat and bash through a window. They didn't have to break down a door. They didn't have to go in the Capitol. They didn't have to bring bear spray and spray it at police officers. So a lot of Republicans are going to dismiss that because they believe the rioters planned it on their own and did it on their own, and they should be prosecuted on their own about it. So, now, in the end, is any of this enough to convict Trump of incitement to insurrection? The answer is going to depend. Obviously, it looks like it's going to be an acquittal. The answer will depend on what each senator thinks about Trump and Trump's time in office. Now, remember, Democrats have tried for years to remove Trump from office for all sorts of offenses, real and imagined, and they're going to vote to convict him. This is another opportunity, maybe the last opportunity, to eliminate Trump as a political factor and to divide and weaken their Republican opponents. They want to stick it to the Republicans in the Senate. Okay. Now, for their part, some Republican senators who defended Trump through all of those attacks will once again defend him. They're going to once again defend him. Now, the question is kind of an interesting question, especially in light of the Bill Cassidy vote. Will there be any who actually try to view the situation de novo, with fresh eyes, just take a fresh look at the situation and completely discard all they know about the last 4 years of Donald Trump's presidency, the only 4 years of his presidency? They won't view it in light of the years of grievances and of feuds. And what would they decide? I will say it's hard to say where they will come down. It's really hard to say where they will come down. There are arguments. There are significant arguments on both sides of this. It's going to break down mostly along party lines. But if it were possible, and it's not, for some person to just come in with a completely fresh perspective and look at it, it's really interesting to think how they might vote. And I'm not going to guess which way it would be. So, listen, thank you very much for listening. I hope you're thinking about these issues. I've been writing about them as well in my newsletter, Byron York's Daily Memo. You can go to WashingtonExaminer.com and sign up. I would really appreciate that. And thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll join us again soon for another edition of the Byron York Show.